Somewhere in the castle, a motor whined on and on. It was a coarse sound that a noble could easily eliminate. But they did not eliminate it precisely because they were nobles. Their civilization flowed along on a river of retro taste. The nobility loved machinery, like steam-driven cranes with gigantic oily cogs, or having bunches of double and triple chains hanging down from the ceilings as far as the eye could see. It was beyond human comprehension how people who found it simple to make nuclear reactors small enough to rest on the tip of your little finger, or elementary particle accelerators, could eschew that energy for rough modes of transport that completely ignored aerodynamics or devices covered with iron rivets. The sound was another example of that. It had been going on for a long time, since the middle of the night, roughly ever since Ringard had murmured, "The damned professors vanished in Coronet's research center." The goal was a certain scientific phenomenon. And there was a case where the same phenomena had been possible through a different approach. This device was trying to accomplish it in a roundabout fashion through scientific means. Toward that end, an enormous amount of energy had been expended for more than an hour. To put it in concrete terms, it was enough energy to destroy the entire Milky Way galaxy 100 times over. Preparations had been completed a half hour ago, and the sound of the motor was proof that all that power was now being used to maintain the current state. Dee entered the castle grounds, and Ringard followed after him. They hadn't been colleagues to start with, so any teamwork was unlikely.
Hey, what's the deal with this castle? They dance right on into morning or something?
Lights burned in the castle windows, and the soft, elegant tune that flowed from them so clearly was undoubtedly a waltz. Coming to the moat and seeing that the drawbridge was already down, Ringard's amazement was at high tide, but the instant they entered the castle courtyard, he was rendered speechless. Garbed in gorgeous raiment, pale-skinned men and women with crimson lips danced in pairs with light, graceful steps. Dark winged beetles weaved between them with prismatically glowing ends, burning out midair only to be replaced by ever-growing numbers of new insects. The jovial nobles held in their hands sloshing glasses of red wine, or bubbly glasses of champagne they would never drink.
What the hell's going on here?
It's an illusion.
An illusion?
Yeah, holograms. With these images, the molecular bonds have been strengthened to give them the same mass as the real thing.
Why would they do that?
The castle's been doing it since we came in the first time. The waltz, the dancers, the band, and the nobles are all just solid projections.
I really don't get it.
You don't have to get it. Now let's get going.
Entering the castle with the source of these questions was a young man with no use for small talk. Guards raced to the scene.
Those an illusion too?
Nope. They're the real deal.
Ringard's iron rings were ready to greet them, but just before they got the chance, the security detail vanished. Perhaps they'd been a dream. New guards came from the end of the corridor.
We're human!
Don't shoot!
We're human!
The oldest of them moved to the front.
That professor fella came to take the Grand Duke's place. He set the Night Fantasia into motion. So we decided to get while the getting's good.
Yeah, do that. Yeah, where's the professor at?
In his grace, the Grand Duke's resting place, but its location is unknown even to us.
Where's Viken?
We looked for him, but couldn't find him. When the professor got here, seems the two of them got to talking.
Ringard watched the fugitives flee.
What a pitiful bunch. Don't give a rat's ass about their lord's safety. God, no wonder nobody takes humans seriously.
Not everybody's like that. Those guys just aren't the best examples.
As the bickering continued, they advanced deeper into the castle.
Gonna have to find his resting place. Or should I just go and make the whole castle disappear?
You'd just be making the same fool mistake all over again, you idiot.
What'd you say?
Suddenly, their surroundings darkened.
This is genuine darkness.
Don't tell me it's time-bewitching incense.
Nope. It's the same result, but through different means. This is based on physics.
What the hell? You mean to tell me the nobility have other ways to make time go crazy?
He wasn't their top engineer for nothing.
That just now. Was that a footstep?
Ringard looked all around before fixing his eyes to the west. A grave rumbling in the earth was approaching from that direction, and with it came the tremendous weight that made those rumbles possible.
It's night.
Ringard looked overhead. He could see only part of a row of stone columns so large a trio of men could link arms around one. The darkness above swallowed even the ceiling, and in the high reaches, stars twinkled.
If we were gonna run, we missed our window.
It was too late now. The enemy was right in front of them.
I saw your statue yesterday, only I couldn't see the face. As the Grand Duke said, either no one could carve it, or it melded with the darkness.
Something moved in the darkness. A huge arm came down from above it there. The fingers were bent, and between the segments, glimpses of an iron core and wires were visible.
You did well to make it here, Dee. And you too, traitor.
You're one to talk! You went and got yourself turned into one of the nobility's flunkies! It's your fault the same thing happened to the rest of the team, you bastard!
They all thanked me. They were grateful to be raised from a fragile human existence to a greater, immortal form of life.
And this tech, was it the Grand Duke's?
Oh, it would seem the man known as Dee has an unusual traveling companion. Yes, the machine that creates a false day or night was the Grand Duke's prized invention. And now, I've inherited that, and everything else from him. And with these devices, the world will be mine in 3 days' time.
The miserable little human world, you mean?
That's right. But don't forget that now. I'm on par with the nobility. And like the Grand Duke, I have no intention of being satisfied merely with this village and the surrounding area. First, I shall negotiate with the capital for half of the human-occupied lands. Though eventually all of them will fall under my control. For the human race, it will simply be like a return to the not-so-distant past. And then there are the nobles' lands. Those, too, I will eventually make my own. It may take a century. It may take a millennium. But now I have an ally. Known as Eternity. And I possess something that the former rulers, now sliding toward extinction, lack. A desire for conquest. Those noble fools once tried their hand at exploring the universe, only to abandon it midway for whatever reason. But I shall make good on it. When my hands have reached to the ends of the ever-expanding universe, I will be the first true ruler in human or noble history.
Yeah, nice story. Back in the day, there were a few screwy nobles that had delusions like that and teamed up with the OSB, and all of them were destroyed before they could do anything to the human world. In short, nobody gets to rock the boat.
You speak of a time when the nobility was still the nobility. Now, at their nadir, their race won't have the strength to thwart my ambitions. See how my power turned day to night and brought a stone colossus across 100 million light years in a mere instant to stand before you. Based on that technology, I shall tap the blood of the Grand Duke that runs through my veins to master even newer technologies. And with them? Oh, this you'll want to hear. I shall accomplish things surpassing even the sacred ancestor.
Oh my! Is that how far gone you are? I see. So, just what did you plan on doing?
Allow me to tell you the message the sacred ancestor left with the Grand Duke. I've decoded it, you see. But in exchange, D, aid me.
How would I aid you?
I'm certain you could be of some use. You, the only man with human blood in him the sacred ancestor deigned to mention. To me, that alone makes it clear you hold the key to the possibilities of the future.
What did the bastard say?
Oh, did you call the sacred ancestor a bastard? Who are you?
Who knows how many people have put that question to Dee? At least, the number that received an answer was well established. 0.
What did the bastard say?
The professor fell silent.
What did he say?
Ringard realized that a battle was taking place between demonic forces beyond his comprehension. The young hunter was driving the faux noble into a corner. The warrior, for the first time, felt not merely threatened by the young man in black, but actual fear. And it seemed he wasn't alone.
Thou shalt visit this place. Visit this place! Ah! Oh, I can't. I can't say it. My head burns. I can say no more.
Continue.
Visit this place and destroy Bergenzie.
No, that's not right.
Up until this point, the young man hadn't drawn his blade.
What's not right? D, the sacred ancestor, he read Bergenzi's future. But that won't be mine. The statue of the sacred ancestor will slay you. Go!
The colossal arm that had stopped in midair came down. Drawing a needle of stark wood with his left hand, D hurled it at the darkness-shrouded chest of the gigantic statue. The arm stopped once more.
Back.
Kicking off the floor, D sailed back a good 30 feet. Several tons of stone rubble came crashing down on his former position, shaking both the building and the darkness. Treading across billowy golden clouds, Francoise wandered. This was a dream. So long as someone somewhere in the world dreamed, Francoise's continued existence was guaranteed. Capitalizing on that principle and her unique condition, she had crept into Dee's dream to save Cornette's life. While they dreamed, the people she visited could converse with her or do battle with her. However, on awakening, it would all be just a dream. None of them would think that it might overlap with reality. The only exception to that was when Francoise made it that way. In a matter of speaking, they were prophetic dreams, dreams that could come true. When humans died in the dream world, they would return to life, in a manner of speaking, when they awoke to reality. However, if someone who lived in dreams were to die there, Francoise. Turning when her name was called, she saw Viking treading across the golden clouds. The eerie glow that spilled from his eyes informed her that he was now something else inside.
The Grand Duke do that?
The Professor, actually.
What do you intend to do to me?
Make you one of us?
Like hell you will.
Viking charged toward her. Jagged teeth jutted from his vermilion lips. Was it fear from the look of him that kept Francoise from even trying to flee? Regardless, when the two silhouettes overlapped, it was Viking that reeled backward. He clutched his forehead. Purplish smoke curled from between his fingers. Madness in his eyes, he glared at what the beauty held in her right hand. It had the same shape as the intersecting lines that had been burned into his skin. A gold cross.
What the hell is that, Francoise?
What the nobility hate more than anything. Many of the world's people are asleep now. And one of them has a memory of this. Not a memory, so much as an image engraved much deeper in their subconscious. when a noble attacked them. They suddenly threw their arms out and crossed them to defend themselves. By making a cross. The person didn't know it, and it was wiped from their memory on top of that. But some deep part of their psyche didn't forget, you see.
Damn you, Françoise! You pay for that!
He turned his still-smoking face toward his friend since childhood. It was the face of a demon. When Françoise thrust the cross at him, he backed away.
Since you've got that, I get a weapon too. See, Françoise! Children of the night!
The beating of countless wings descended toward Françoise from above.
Bats?
Yes, indeed. But not just any bats. Vampire bats. Don't worry, though. They don't have the power to make anyone one of the nobility.
The black and gray swarm covered Françoise from head to toe. Blood gushed from her face, her hands, and her feet. There was the pain of short fangs jabbing into her. The cross fell at her feet. Suddenly, the vampire children flew upward. Staggering, Françoise was a heart-wrenching sight. The small wounds they'd left all over her body must have numbered more than 1,000. Blood dripped from them across her skin, stains spreading through her clothing until the dress she wore was pure vermilion. Grabbing her over the shoulder and pulling her close, Viken bared his fangs with malice and delight, without any further interference before he drove them into Francois's carotid artery. Viken pulled his lips away. He drunk deeply of her blood. Now Françoise would be one of them. And yet, he lacked confidence. An indescribable feeling of incongruity put a perplexed expression on his face. Pressing down on the wound, Françoise backed away. She knew the reason for that feeling of incongruity. It was almost as if this situation wasn't real.
What's this?
Their surroundings had suddenly begun to change. Old-fashioned generators, an anti-proton reactor, an automated surgical system, all these handcrafted devices lined the walls of the room haphazardly, giving it the feel of a faintly decent research center. On the far side of the room, a figure in a purple hood was gazing at them. This was the research center in the real world. To the other two, the real world was a dream. That was the feeling of incongruity both assailant and victim had felt the instant he drank her blood. The bite had taken place where reality wasn't the opposite of a dream, but rather the equivalent of one. It had no impact whatsoever on them in reality. The vampire's bite had been rendered null and void.
How could this happen? Why are we here?
Viking glared at the hooded figure seated in front of a desk on the other side of the room.
Oh, you pulled something, didn't you? You bastard!
The hooded figure, Cornette, gave a hearty slap to the cylindrical device sitting on the desk.
Yes, I've been working on this baby ever since I was attacked. Ever since I promised her, Françoise, in a dream. It's a device for swapping dreams and reality. And now, I'll really show you what it can do.
For Viking and the girl, this was a dream. His body passed through the desk and a generator without any resistance at all. Eyeing the bizarre contraption, Cornette grabbed a crossbow off the top of a table and braced it against his shoulder. It was already loaded with a bolt. Viken halted.
You idiot! You might have dragged me here, but I'm still just a dream to you. How's reality supposed to destroy a dream?
I believe I just told you I was going to show you what it could really do.
Beside him, a green light glowed. Viken pounced. The figure in midair was linked to one on the ground by the bolt clutched in Viken's fist. Cornette saw Viken smile.
Die!
The monstrous strength of a noble drove it through liquid metal. Cornette retreated. The crossbow fell at his feet. Standing between the two men with arms extended, the android had pale blue sparks of electromagneticism spraying from her wound as she collapsed.
That was my nerve core. Farewell, Cornette.
You son of a bitch!
When Viking shifted his gaze from Francois to him, Cornet didn't have a weapon in his hands.
Saved by a machine! And a woman at that!
Once more, Viking sailed into the air. With the eyes of a triumphant devil, he saw the human he cornered like a rat haul back with his right hand. When he realized it was a smallish sword that had arced around elegantly for a solid hit well wide of his heart, Viking was just as full of confidence as ever. The arc of his leap became a vertical drop, and Viking fell to the floor. His heart had nearly stopped beating, even though the blade had missed it. However, that was the dagger Dee had given Cornet, a blade imbued with the power of both Dee and his left hand. Viking gazed down absentmindedly at the simple handle protruding from the left side of his chest.
How? Out here? I'm just a dream, aren't I?
Touching the device, Cornet explained the truth.
The real function of this gadget wasn't to pull the two of you out here. It was to change dreams into reality. Now, you and Francois are part of reality. That's why my dagger could destroy you.
A hell of a thing.
The light was rapidly fading from eyes that had glowed red as blood. When dreams and reality become one, he was fated to be destroyed.
Chosen!
Cornet raced over to where the other woman had fallen. The electromagnetic waves had already ceased, and the android girl had stopped moving. The strength fled Cornet, and tears spilled from his eyes. A pale hand reached from beside him to gently stroke the android's cheek.
The other me. She saved your life, didn't she? Thank you.
The last remark was directed at her doppelganger. Cornet nodded for no particular reason.
What are you doing here? I've searched everywhere for you. What have you been doing?
These questions were perfectly natural from a big sister.
I found out about the Grand Duke's master plan. He was going to use the human race to become ruler of the universe. That's why he was so kind to humans. Or at least why he didn't prey on them. And then he ordered me to research and develop a machine that could turn humans into nobles without ever being bitten. The scary thing is, it had already been perfected ages and ages ago by certain noble and human scientists. Naturally, I refused to cooperate. At that point, the Grand Duke carved my face up with a knife, and he said he'd pull my tongue out next. For all the advances their civilization made, they still use tortures worse than the beasts of antiquity. Covered in blood and groaning, I was in utter despair. And then I offered him a condition that would protect me and the village. If he harmed me, I would disclose to the world something the nobility feared besides sunlight. Actually, I was bluffing, but the Grand Duke believed me, and he made me swear to keep an eternal secret in exchange for not going after you. I accepted. Given the situation, I couldn't leave the village. I knew perfectly well the Grand Duke would come after me. Fortunately, when I was a kid, I discovered there was this whole world down here. And piece by piece, I brought in the devices I'd taken from the castle and started living here. And all the while, I swore I'd get the Grand Duke someday for what he'd done to my face.
You poor thing.
Francoise gently cradled the head of Cornet, or Josen, to her chest. They were brother and sister again. After some time, she asked her next question.
So, will I be able to stay like this forever?
He shook his head from side to side.
The materials I had to work with weren't very strong. You'll last a little over 10 minutes more.
But I'll be okay until then?
Yeah.
That's fine, then. Okay, let's talk about what comes next.
What comes next for you, sis?
Since Viking's dead and he's the one who turned me into a dream, I'll fade away at some point. But let's talk about after that. Let me tell you about all the machines and instruments I saw in the noble's castle. You can copy them and make yourself a fortune, or use them for the good of the village, whichever you like.
Yeah, you're right. I'll do that, Francoise. That's just what I'll do, sis.
From time to time, you see things that are simply too much to believe. Who would have thought anyone of noble blood, hunter or not, could smash a statue of the sacred ancestor so easily? D, who or what are you?
Come. If you're going to hide in a coffin, there's no point swapping night and day.
Oh, I believe I will come out.
Watch yourself. Night'll change into day.
I'll help you.
Stay out of this.
At that moment, there was a terrible explosion of stark light and blistering heat. The light shining down from the ceiling illuminated Dee alone. His whole body was being charred right to the marrow. It was like the sunlight attack he'd experienced in Viking's magical zone. Only this assault was 10,000 times the agony.
This is one of the Grand Duke's original creations. He dubbed it the Spotlight Effect. And I'm using it to focus all the sunlight in this entire region on you. Oh, your skin's started to melt. Not so handsome now, are you?
Come out here.
Very well.
Behind the light, in a time where night still held sway, a figure appeared.
That bastard! Dee, you really gotta let me do something.
Don't.
Ringard, you'll be next, you vile traitor.
Though a stark needle sank into the professor's chest, Dee remained poised from the throw as he thrust his left hand forward.
I've raised the beam's volume to an entire continent's worth of sunlight. Next, I'll set it for a planet's worth. You can just rest your filthy bones there in the wholesome light of the morning sun.
This is the last part of the sacred ancestor's words.
What?
Thou shalt slay not Bergenzi, but the one who succeeds him.
His longsword danced out in the light, a blade of darkness challenging the light, backed as it was by the noble power that mocked the very laws of physics. The professor was slashed from the left side of his neck to his right hip, and then the blade turned like a swallow in flight to pierce him through the heart and out the back. At the same time, both Dee and his blade fell flat against the floor.
Oh, you bastard! I don't believe it! Where did such power...
As the professor collapsed, beside him stood a weighty figure.
You must help me. Please.
The professor extended his hands. They reached toward a figure with five chins and a face twisted by scorn.
Help the Bergenzi pretender?
Looking down on the twitching form with nothing save contempt, Baron Agrippa raised his right foot, then brought it down on the professor's face with all his might. It was smashed to pieces.
And thus ends the grubby little peddler from the world of humanity, which leaves only the filthy half-breed killer, if I'm correct. Ah, but what a gorgeous man. Your lovely countenance and agonizing death alone should earn you an introduction. I am Baron Agrippa. I am Bergenzi's best friend. We were the only two real nobles in this castle.
The Baron puffed out his chest. The buttons on his jacket popped off like shots from a gun.
You must excuse me. Gluttony is a mainstay of the nobility. In making a compact to drink human blood, Bergenzi plumbed the lowest depths of degeneracy. But I shall stand firm. Someday our end will likely come. But until that day, I shall assail the human shacks with the coming of night, lure out their daughters, and drink to my heart's contentment. That is how the nobility were meant to be. But before any of that, it seems the planet's worth won't work on you. I shall drain the daylight of the entire Milky Way on you.
Dee's shape dissolved in the light. The young man in black stood before Francoise. He was in a horrible state.
But you... you're not even sleeping.
He started running. Baron Agrippa heard the voice of the man, who clearly had one hand braced against the floor, whisper in his ear.
Looks like the dream wins.
The nobleman couldn't do anything. His bull neck easily severed, spine and all, and a steely tip driven into his back and out through his heart. He was powerless to do anything save collapse. A split second before the darkness swallowed his consciousness, he used his assimilation power. But ultimately, all it assimilated was the black hole that had suddenly appeared. In the darkness, the noble turned to dust, while in the light, the hunter in black got to his feet. In no time at all, the light dissolved into the darkness, and the darkness was swallowed up by the light.
So, your business here wrapped up now?
Not replying to that, Dee walked past without acknowledgement.
I suppose I should thank you.
For it was Ringard's black hole that had stopped Baron Agrippa's final attack.
I'll save it. It wasn't you this whammy was aimed at, it was me. It was do or die time. Hell, I was just saving my own skin.
Dee went out into the garden and had just straddled his cyborg horse when Ringard caught up to him. Though the sun hadn't fully risen yet, the skies were clear.
Night coming and dreams coming on a fine day like this. There's just no figuring out this world of ours, is there?
The two of them started riding across the drawbridge over the moat.
So, what do you do next? Well, I suppose wherever you go, you'd be hunting nobility, eh? I'm sure there's quite a demand for your talents, am I right? To be honest, I'm plumb worn out. I think maybe I'll get out of the game and become a farmer or something.
Good choice there.
Hey, if you're gonna compliment me, at least do it in your own voice.
And then a bullet went right through his chest. A pair of figures appeared from behind the stone columns on the far side of the moat. One tall, the other short. Lyden and Puma, the son of the former mayor. The boy had a rifle braced against his shoulder.
His friend killed my mother.
A long, long time ago, I heard somebody say, truth will out. Which means you can't get away with doing wrong, I guess. And it was me that sent the heart of that kid's father into another dimension.
The man's life ended before he could ever get to that farmhouse. Reeling back wildly, Ringard leaned forward once more before falling shoulder first into the black waters of the moat. The taciturn rider passed the pair in silence.
About an hour or so ago, we went by Bezos' house. Son of a bitch was draining his kids dry. The two of us took care of him, though.
Letting the words pass by like they were intended for someone else altogether, Dee slowly rode away. When he hit the road that continued onto the highway, a young man in a hood was standing beside an enormous tree in the distance.
Look who popped out of his hole. Guess he decided to do something for the good of the village.
There was no reply. Dee's eyes were shut.
Were you asleep?
Yes, a little while.
Well, aren't you a carefree bugger?
I had a dream.
What kind?
One I'll never have again.
That's you in a nutshell. So, what the hell was this dream anyway?
Goodbye, Dee.
A pale beauty offered up a soft smile to the hunter. Perhaps her name was Francoise.
Vampire Hunter D, number 29, Noble Front, written by Hideyuki Kikuchi and Yashitaka Amano, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2020, Hideyuki Kikuchi and Yashitaka Amano. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the authors and Dark Horse Comics. Production copyright 2026, Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Scott McCormick. Featuring David Queequee as Vampire Hunter D. Terence Aselford as the Left Hand, Laura C. Harris as Francoise, Rob Marrera as Corden, Michael Glenn as Ringard, Christopher Tester as Viking, James Konacek as Professor Cheney, Chris Davenport as Lasco, Andrew Kilpa as Habaki, John Vertullo as Grand Duke Bregenzi, Troy Allen as Leiden, Sandy Stock as Elsa, Sasha Olinick as Baron Agrippa, Torian Brackett as Jakos, Peter DiGilio as Mask, Brian Kim McCormick as Bezo Shakuri, Shanta Parashuraman as Marcella, Stephen Carpenter as Valen, Cody Roberts as Dosia, Renee Dorian as Anne, Drew Kopis as Puma, with additional performances by Matthew Bassett, Scott Bruffy, Eric Messner, Ken Jackson, Kenyatta Rogers, Michael John Casey, and Nora Ishradi. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Scott McCormick. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Mayan Ross. Theme music by Robert McDonald. Original music by Robert McDonald and Jameson Hunt. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Sidney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. D will return in Vampire Hunter D Book 30, Gold Fiend, Parts 1 and 2. Marquis Varinus, he's a powerful noble. He's in possession of antimatter technology, and he's $300 million in debt to Old El, the lender of last resort out on the frontier. The Vampire Lord even put up his castle as collateral, but not a single collection agent dispatched by El has returned. So it's time to call in an outside consultant named D. But the mooching Marquis isn't the only one who owes the financier big time and would rather kill Old El than pay up. And those debtors too mean deadly trouble ahead for D, even if they're only human. If you want more sci-fi fantasy action, keep listening for samples of The Lost Fleet by Jack Campbell and Matthew Corbett number 1 Speaks the Nightbird by Robert McCammon. Both available now in fantastic graphic audio.
Shawcum took another drink and sloshed the liquor around in his mouth. He propped his feet up on the table beside them and leaned back in his chair.
You don't mind me asking, what business do you have in Fount Royal?
It's a legal matter. I'm a magistrate.
Ah.
Shawcum nodded as if he understood perfectly.
Both of you wear the robes?
No, Matthew is my clerk.
It's to do with the trouble there, am I right?
It is a matter of some concern, yes.
Oh, I know the particulars. Ain't no secret. Message Rider's been back and forth through here for the last couple of months. They give me the story. Tell me this, then. You gonna hang her, burn her, or cut her head off?
Firstly, the accusations against her must be proven. Secondly, execution is not one of my duties.
But you'll be passing the sentence, won't you? Come on, what'll it be?
If she's found guilty, the penalty is hanging.
Shawcum waved a disapproving hand.
If it was up to my quirt, I'd cut her head off and burn her to boot. And I'd take them ashes and throw them in the ocean. They can't stand salt water, you know.
He tilted his head toward the hearth and looked to Maud.
Oi! We're waiting for our suppers!
Maud threw a hateful glare at the tavern owner, then shuffled off into the pantry. Another swig of rum went down Chalkham's hatch as he brought his focus back to Woodward.
Well, this here's how I see it. They ought to shut Fount Royal down, set fire to everything there, and call it quits. Once the devil gets in a place, ain't no remedy but the flames. You can hang her or whatever you please, but the devil's took root in Fount Royal now, and there ain't no saving it.
I think that's an extreme position. Other towns have had similar problems, and they've survived and have flourished once the situation was corrected.
Well, I wouldn't want to live in Fount Royal or any other place where the devil's been walking around town like he's made himself at home. I've stamped hard enough as it is. I don't want conjures being put on me while I'm sleeping.
Shawcum tightened his gaze on Woodward.
Yes, sir. My advice to you, sir, lowly tavern keeper that I am, is to cut the head off that devil's oar and order the old town burnt to the ground.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles and genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.